and welcome back to another edition of Living Ring Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, G Funky, the G with the double F. Hey, man, it's good to be back.
Yes, it's good.
It's cold over here in California. As you know, you're up in Sactown. I'm over here in Motown. Freezing cold. You know what? G, you know what I've noticed? The older we get, the harder the simple things are for us to do. You know, like when I'm at work and I drop a tool or a pin, I dread. I go, I gotta bend down. I gotta bend my knees. I gotta get blood circling through my knees to reach and grab it. To the point that when I drop it, that process goes through my head. And I'm like, oh, Jesus, I gotta bend down. It doesn't matter if it's cold or if it's hot. It's just the older you get, these small things you start to dread. So I start looking around to see maybe my kids around or somebody that's more youthful than me that can do me a great deed and favor by going, hey, I'll reach out and grab it for you, right?
I got you. Don't worry.
Right? There's just certain things that when you were young, you could say like, hey, the hell with it. I can get through it. I can go out, drink all night till 3, 4, 5, 6 in the morning and still be at work the next day. Miss the beat.
Yes.
Still be sharp to the point that all I need is 30 minutes or 15 minutes of sleep time and then I'm regenerated and I'm ready to go. So, I know there's a lot of our listeners that probably feel the same way because they're in the age bracket that we're at, you know, in the 40s and 50s and above. So, when I sat there and looked back at Mike Tyson getting back into the ring at the age of 58 or 59, it's one of those. All I know is he's old. Guy's been around since the 80s, okay? Since the times when I was a kid when you had the black box to steal the pay-per-view. That's how long he's been around, okay? To see this guy get back into the ring and face a young kid who's 28, right? Am I right? Is he 28, Jake Paul? Jake Paul,
28. 27, something like that, yeah.
27, okay. Now, I was close to it, right? 1 year off. To get back in there and give a sparring light workout performance. Now, conspiracy heads are going to go like, oh, it was rigged, it was that. Listen, if you were a guy that tuned in thinking that this was going to be a legitimate, that's the key word, legitimate match, then you're the only one that conned yourself. Because All Netflix did was host it. All Jake Paul was say, hey, this is who I want to fight. If you were unhappy and unsure if it was going to be a legitimate fight, you didn't have to get on the stream, Netflix stream. You didn't have to watch it. I didn't watch it. Did you watch it? I didn't watch it. I watched the two undercards, and then it was lights out for me because the stream was lagging. There were so many people. I don't know what the latest report is, but the last one I heard was like, what, 60 million, 70 million people tried to stream it. That just tells you that even a fantasy fight, which that's what it was, could still generate popularity in the world. Not the boxing world, but I mean in the world, right? You could get the people that normally won't watch fights. I had like my sister-in-laws text my wife. They don't watch boxing. They don't watch any, but they text it in a group chat. They have a group chat. You know, like most women, they always have a group chat.
Right.
Are you guys going to watch the fight? And I'm like, there you go.
We got the same thing, man. A lot of people that normally don't watch fights were hitting me up. And you know this, Dave, as well as me, because we're lifelong boxing fans. We're the guys that the casuals go to when these events happen. You know, like, hey, man, are you going to watch it? What do you think? You know, what is your prediction? And I'm just like, I'll tell you this, man. Tyson, he might quit. That was really what I thought. I thought he was going to be so exhausted by about 4 or 5 rounds that he might not just come out to finish the fight. And look, credit to him, man, being 58 years old and being able to go 8 2-minute rounds. I mean, that's a lot, man. That's a lot for a guy like that who last time he was in the ring was 4 years ago. So looked like he was battling an injury, too. He had a knee brace on, which is never a good sign. especially at that age. So, I try to tell people, try to talk them off the ledge, because there was a lot of people I know, old school Tyson fans, were like, "Man, all he's got to do is catch one good shot and he's out of there." And
One
I'm
big
like,
shot. Yeah.
it's not gonna happen, guys.
You know, I think what people are forgetting that even to be in that level of novelty that Jake Paul's in, because he hasn't beaten a legitimate fighter. He lost to Tommy Fury,
No.
which we'll get into to that in a minute. But to even sparring alone, like I don't think people understand how difficult it is to do just 2 minutes. Like when you see the women fighters, which shout out to Amanda Serrano and Katie Taylor, they stole the night. It was fight of the year. Phenomenal back and forth action between the two young ladies. But when guys sit back and they don't understand that 2 minutes of sparring, G, is like 15 minutes to a person that's never done really extreme cardio. That's what boxing is. There's so many fundamentals to boxing that people sometimes think it's two guys punching themselves punching each other in the head, and that's all that it takes is throwing a punch. Nobody understands the setups. Nobody understands the cardio that has to come along with that. You know, nobody understands that if you get hit solid, that it's just not your chin that's got to have resistance, but you have to have condition
Yes.
to recoup and keep and gather yourself back together to continue forward. There's so much involved in being a fighter. So when I hear guys go like, "Ah, this guy, he went 8 rounds, Mike Tyson, da 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 da," just to get that 8 rounds. I mean, look, we've said it. I know I've said it. I know a lot of, crazy fight fans like myself have said this, that you shouldn't give the loser a standing ovation. He lost. Mike Tyson lost.
Yeah.
But at 58, 59, you got to give him a standing ovation here, and you got to give him kudos because he took on a fight, and you know damn well, and tell me if I'm wrong about this. Now, again, I'm not a conspiracist, but I could almost hear the conversation when this fight was talked about 2 years back. Jake Paul goes to him, goes, "Hey, Mike, wouldn't it be fun if we made a shitload of money? You come back, I fight you. I make sure that it's just a light tussle, nothing serious, and we walk away. We walk away with a lot of green in our pocket." Iron
That
Mike
they
is no
did.
fool. He's no fool. He's not going to say no to how much money he gained from that fight. You know, I mean, any fighter in that age bracket, you're telling me that they wouldn't have like jumped to that opportunity, going like, "Wait a minute. So you're saying you're not going to embarrass me, like end my legacy with a YouTuber knocking me out?" I mean, did it tarnish his legacy fighting this kid? All the other shit that Mike's done, convicted rapist, telling a guy that he wanted to F him in the butt until he loved him.
Oh, man.
Come on.
Yeah,
Telling
he's.
the he told a female reporter that he's not used to speaking to females unless he's groping them.
Yeah, he's done a lot of things, man. So this, yeah, I don't think this will do much harm to to his legacy that he's built on his own, yeah, no, I agree with you, man. There was a lot of money. Mike Tyson still carries a lot of weight in boxing. We saw that when in his exhibition that he had against Roy Jones 4 years ago. Over 1 million people bought that thing. You know,
Yep.
they still love Mike Tyson. He's still big business. Jake Paul, now look, no disrespect to anybody out there that's listening that is a fan of Jake Paul, but I really don't even know what this guy is famous for, to be quite honest with you. I know nothing about the guy until he got into our sport. But one thing I did know is that he brings a lot of eyes with him. And we see that every time he fights. Cowboy Stadium, AT&T, I think is what it's called. I mean, thousands and thousands of people are there. Like you said, 60 million people were streaming that fight that night. I was one of them. I'm not gonna lie, I watched the whole thing. And yeah, I was not surprised at the outcome because it's a young man sport. You and I know that.
Absolutely.
Every boxing fan should know that. So every boxing fan was shouldn't be surprised at the way Tyson looked. I think it was more of, like we said, the guys who were casuals who only watched in the 80s and the 90s just because of Mike Tyson, that were gone for many, many years, and then they came back because they saw their favorite fighter is getting back in the ring. They were the only ones that were surprised. They were the ones that were saying that it was fixed and scripted and all these things. But we knew what was coming, man. And
Right.
yeah, God bless him, Mike Tyson. He's done a lot, like you said, he's done a lot of damage to himself. And he's lost a lot of money. He was the richest guy in boxing history at one point in the 80s and the 90s. Lost it all. And I mean, look, he came back and look, now he's rich, possibly richer than he was back then, you know? I know he made a killing here with Jake Paul. So we'll see what happens, man. There's been rumors of them possibly doing it again, but if I'm Mike Tyson, I say no. I just take the money and run, Mike.
Take the money and run. You don't need it. I mean, there's no such thing as you don't need more money. Everybody needs more and more, you know. But to subject your body to get it in the shape that he was in, which you look great.
Yeah.
Look great, you know? I mean, he really did look like he still can do some serious damage. In a bar fight, would you get in a fight with this guy? No.
No.
Absolutely not. I'd be like, Mike, just
No.
take my beer. No, matter of fact, here's my wallet. Just take it.
Yeah.
Enjoy yourself. You know? But going
That's
back with
right,
Jake
man.
Paul, look, kid's an entertainer. He hasn't proven yet that he's a complete fighter or he's serious about the sport of boxing. He's calling out Canelo, which is a major payday. Canelo's kind of entertaining that as well. Again, can you blame Canelo? Or matter of fact, can you blame any fighter who wants to
No.
take Dubois, Daniel Dubois, who has a trickle belt? He's like, hey, DM'd him. Slipped in his DMs, as the kids say, right? Slipped in his DMs and said, hey, man, I'll get in there with you. I'll tangle with you. But the one thing is that fans have been calling out, and even a lot of Jake Paul fans are now asking him, like, okay, we've had fun. You've beat up MMA guys. Legends in MMA. You beat up basketball players. You beat up an old legend, Mike Tyson. But you still lost to a guy named Tommy Fury, who isn't that good. Tommy is not, I
No.
mean, all respect to Tommy. All respect to Tommy. But he kind of struggled with Jake Paul in that first fight. It wasn't like a dominant performance. There was a moment he got
No.
dropped. It was, you know, like, I don't know. He's losing some rounds, or he doesn't have control, and he still looks unsure of himself. Well, they had a little back and forth here on X. I want to read you what Jake Paul had said to Tommy
Ah, let's
Fury.
hear it.
What an absolute muppet. Buddy, you just pulled out of the fight for the third time. You have zero credibility. I offered you $8 million and you ran away from it. And now you're dumped by Molly, getting sued by DAZN, and still can't call a shot without your dad. Get the F out of here. Listen, I don't know if any of that's true, but I think that if Jake Paul can't spark interest, you know, without tagging his name with Canelo, he's got to find somewhere else. And the kid's a good troll on the internet. Gee, we got to admit, the guy knows how to generate interest through the internet waves. He gets people to
Yeah.
notice. And this may be a prime example of him testing the waters by finding out, hey, are people interested in the rematch? And would they pay that extra amount of dollar to see me and Tommy Fury do it again? I don't know the numbers. I mean,
Yeah.
I don't know if we could look up the numbers for the Tommy Fury, Jake Paul. I'll give it a shot right now.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't remember the pay-per-view numbers that it did. I know it did pretty well, which I'm not surprised. Probably in the UK as well, because Fury, Tommy Fury, that is, I believe he's like a reality TV guy right. as well.
He was on some show on Netflix as well. Yeah, and he was on his brother's reality show.
Yeah. So he's got a following too. So yeah, it's a massive fight as far as business goes. So I could definitely see that happening again. And I could still see Tommy beating Jake Paul because, like you stated earlier, Paul is just not a good boxer, man. He's not.
But look, man. So it's reported that they did over 500,000 pay-per-views buys, generating an estimate of $25 million in revenue on the pay-per-view price of around $50 per purchase. That's pretty good, G. And the standards of today, that's pretty good.
Considering illegal streams and things like that, that right. a lot of fans do today, 500K is really, really good for two guys who really aren't that good. I mean, Fury's got a little bit of an amateur background. He comes from a family of boxers. His father, I believe, used to box. His older brother, Tyson Fury, was right. on the cusp of becoming the undisputed heavyweight champion of the world just, you know, back in the summer. So, you know, he comes from a fighting family. Paul, not so much. And, you know, it showed in their first fight, man. I was not surprised at the outcome. I mean, he was able to control Jake with, you know, just a basic jab, 1-2 every now and then. Paul, he's just not – he's not taking boxing as serious as he wants people to think that he is. You know, he keeps saying things at every opponent. Are they good? They're not going to – still not going to give me my credit or my respect or whatever. It's like, well – first off, take things serious. That's number one. Let's see some improvements, number two. And if you really want to make a splash, you know, fight some real fighters, man. You know, come up like the prospects do.
Right. I mean, he's moving himself like a prospect. Him and his manager have done a fantastic job picking and choosing who he should step in. But if you want the credit of what you're asking for, and I really don't even know if he's being honest about that credit that he's asking for from the real fight fans, right, or from the fight world. Because here's the thing, when I listen to other people talk about the Tyson Fury, not even that, because I didn't watch it live, but I did go back to catch it on Netflix. And I listened to the commentators and some of them like, you know, you can see improvement with Jake Paul. I'm like, how? What improvements do you see? He's fighting a 58, 59-year-old man out there that has no legs, had nothing underneath him. He had one good punch in the beginning of the first 5 seconds of the round. And that was it.
That's it.
You know? Yeah. So I don't see improvement. And it's really hard, G, to see improvement or to criticize a guy that are fighting other guys that have no footwork, have no establishment, solid establishment in the boxing rankings. It's very, very, very difficult. You know? If there is no Tommy Fury, which that was the real test, and he didn't pass it. He didn't pass it.
Yeah.
But there is interest. Why? Because revenge. Revenge always sells beautifully in the boxing world and even to the casuals. Revenge. They have a story there together. So I see it doing very well. But if they can't agree on a purse to move forward with this fight, honestly, I think the next guy that I see in the line for him is probably Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., in Mexico or Texas. Look, the guy's looking for names, and no matter what, the casual Mexican-American fans, they will run to watch this. You know, Chavez Sr., Gran Campeón is a dynasty in Mexico and here, especially here in California or Texas, Arizona, New Mexico. Anywhere where there's a huge Latino market and community, Julio Cesar Chavez's name holds weight, and I mean a lot of weight. So for him to go like, hey, I'll take a jab at this guy, I could see him doing that. Why? The guy's inactive. He's been troublesome outside and even inside the ring, and it looks good on his resume, and that's all he cares about is selling you that trailer. Which that's what he sold to a lot of people with this Mike Tyson thing. They ended up a bunch of like 5 seconds of him training, and they sent it out like a movie trailer. Right? We've seen a movie trailer. Then you get to the movie finally. You're anticipating the movie, and you're like, shit, They just showed all the most exciting parts were already in the trailer. That was it. That's exactly what Jake Paul does here. Exactly what he does here. So if there is no Julio, I mean, if there is no Tommy Fury and there is no Julio Cesar Chavez, who's the step up guy for you that tells you he's serious about his resume, or he's serious about you taking him serious in his career?
I don't know. It really all depends on what division he wants to compete in. I know that this fight, he was fighting at heavyweight. I believe this is the heaviest he's ever came in for a fight, which was about 220-something, 228, I think. He has fought at cruiserweight before. It really all depends on what division he wants to fight in. But, oh, man, you bringing up Chavez Jr., oh, dude, just gives me nightmares, because he's the absolute worst representative that boxing could send out there to get rid of this guy, you know? A lot of fight fans are tired of Jake Paul, right? And I'm talking about the real fight fans, not Jake Paul fans.
Right.
A lot of them are sick of the guy. They want somebody to just end him and knock him out in a fight. Chavez is the worst guy that you could put out there. He was
undisciplined.
Yeah, undisciplined. So undisciplined in his career. Just pampered his whole life. I mean, the guy didn't want to train. I mean, he's over there. They're trying to do promotion for the one big fight that he had against Sergio Martinez, and the guy's eating Cheerios in his pink panties in his living room instead of training, you know? Like,
right.
He's the worst possible guy that we could send out there. And I hate to say this, man, but I've always given Chavez Jr. a lot of heat over the years. I might have to root for Jake Paul in this one, man. Oh, because I just don't like the kid, man. I never have and never will.
Oh, you know, I might be there in line with you, buddy. We're going to have to hold up our picket signs there, you know. I hope it doesn't happen, but there has been in the circuit that he could be the possible candidate for Jake Paul. If they can get the kid in a pair of boxing trunks and out of his underwear, his estantarans, and away from a Cheerio box, I don't know. Again, Jake Paul, keep doing what you're doing. You're generating a lot for boxing, whether it's good or bad. It doesn't really matter. Boxing alone has embarrassed itself more than a million times, okay? We are the black sheep of every other sport. Though, I have to tell you this, the only difference with boxing and NFL, NBA, the baseball league, is that those other sports and leagues hide their dirt better than we do. We just haven't learned that. We're just so used to, like, you know, we're born. The sport of boxing was born out of the dark corners, right? That they're like, screw it. Yeah, you already know what I am. Well, why am I going to dress it up a different way, right? They say, that's that old saying, you know, you could put lipstick on a pig, but it's still a pig. Well, that's boxing for you.
Yeah. Yep, indeed.
So also in the X world, it's so weird, man, to call it X, right? I don't even understand why it's called the X. Well, I guess we'll get into that another day, another time, and another show. But back on the X world here, as we know that, I guess the good thing about X and the social media platforms is that we're now able to read everything in real time, things that are happening, things that we normally would have to wait for a magazine to produce, dish out. And I'm talking about in my days, you know, you had the KO magazine, Ring magazine, you got your fight schedule from those magazines or the newspaper or something, you know, there was a TV schedule. Then it moved on to websites, Max Boxing, you know, Boxing Scene, Fight Hype, House of Boxing. Then you got your news there. Now you got a platform where the fighters are their hands on direct, telling us exactly what is beating through their minds, and with no filter are able to shout out anything and everything possible through social media. Well, in his boots, after his fight a couple weeks back, he has said, I don't know. He told Chris Mannix on his own, I don't know if I can continue, and I'm paraphrasing here, I don't know if I can continue at 147. I think my body's, you know, ready to move up to 154.
I think it might be time. time to go into 54, yo.
Did you feel differently?
I felt good, but I just, you know, I feel like at 54, I'm going to be way better and my pop going to be how it's supposed to be. I'm getting older now. I'm 27. I'll be 28 next year.
So, Victor Ortiz Jr. and them, or not, well, the whole world were like, well, shit, face Victor Ortiz Jr. I'm sorry, Virgil. Right. Why I keep saying Victor?
Virgil. Yeah.
Virgil Ortiz Jr. That's another guy. Virgil, face Virgil Ortiz Jr. This is perfect, right? I mean, you need a notable guy. This is a big fight. This fight draws many eyes to it. Let's make this thing happen. But then later on, change his tune. He kind of put his boot in his mouth here. G-Funk, Boots, yes. Ennis put his boot in his mouth by saying, I think my body's ready to move up. And then later say, no, I want to unify. You know, I'm going to unify. And immediately, the fans, rightfully so, because they heard one thing and now they're seeing another, start attacking Boots by calling him a duck. Saying, hey, yeah. You ducked him. What happened to you? Move up. What happened to this? Now, Boots is entitled to change his mind. And I've always said this. Never keep a fighter's word on a post-interview because there's so many emotions. You know, yeah, one is, yeah. You could tell he wasn't completely happy with his performance. He wanted to display a knockout. He wanted to show that he's 100% back. He's the 147 king. By knocking out his opponent, could have probably enticed Crawford to go, okay, I'll finally face you. It didn't play out that way. And I don't know about you, G, but I think that he let the better of his emotions get the hold of him that night at that post interview with Chris Mannix to say, I think I'm just going to move up. Not realizing who's waiting for him a few pounds up at 154.
Right. Right. No, that's a good point, man. Definitely him and his promoter, Eddie Hearn, were not on the same page post-fight interview. One guy saying, you know, I think it's time for me to move up. The other guy saying, well, the plan is to stay here and unify.
Right.
Which, I mean, look, that's great if you can get those things done. But the problem is we understand boxing politics, promotional lines. We got a guy like Boots who signed a Matchroom, IBF champ. You got Mario Barrios who's signed to Premier Boxing Champions. You got Brian Norman Jr. who signed a Top Rank. I believe Stantionis is the WBA, and I'm not sure who his actual promoter is, but I know he's fought on a lot of PBC cards.
I thought he was on Top Rank. I could be wrong, but
yeah. So getting a unification at 147, that doesn't seem very likely at this point for Boots. So I would say, why not move up, fight Virgil Ortiz? Now I know there's no belt on the line. But you're going to make a career-high payday, most likely, with Turki Alashik being the guy who's funding this card. And you won't lose your belt because I believe that the IBF, right, they're very strict on the mandatories. Well, he just took care of his mandatory. And this guy from the Ukraine, who's I'm not even going to attempt to say his last name. I'll butcher it. But that was his mandatory.
Right.
Took care of that. So even if you want to come back down after fighting Virgil, he could still remain champion because he has no mandatory. So
absolutely.
It's a weird situation with what happened with that. And then now there's rumblings of him that there's talks have begun between him and Top Rank's super lightweight champion, Teofimo Lopez, which again goes against what his promoter said was the plan, which was to unify at 147. Lopez is not a champion. He's never even fought in that division. I'm not saying I don't want to see the fight, but I'm just saying it goes against what they said they wanted to do, you know?
Absolutely. It makes me wonder, though, this, G, because all the names you just mentioned, and then especially with Turk Alashik involved with this and been doing this right of season, doing 5 for 5. Me sitting back and just kind of reading this and, you know, again, understanding the fight game sometimes that, you know, there's certain puzzles to the game that need to be perfectly fit before it can move forward. You know, as a fight fan, I don't care about all the logistics to it. I just want to see the fight happen. But then when you look into the fight game of how it's really run, it's a business.
Yes.
I have a feeling that the Turk went up to Eddie and said, listen, This is my plan. Maybe we do a tournament. Why have him move up? You know, I have Ortiz Jr. maybe doing something else first. And then Top Rank right now, we don't even know if the renewal of ESPN contract is going to happen in 2005. Right. Bob Emmer's already saying, hey, I'm going to have a sit down with the Turk and DAZN, and let's see what goes from there. I love it. I think it's much better for the sport to be all under one banner. There's pros and there's cons to it. But I'm wondering that until the Turk has more of a clear plan of what the promoters are going to be in line to do with him, I think we're not going to be clear on the big fights that are going to happen in 2005 that are involved with the Turk and involved with DAZN. I think there's a lot of maneuvers that need to be done. And I don't think we're going to get answers until mid of next year of 2005. I could be wrong. I'm guessing at this. You know, I'm just trying to throw some logic here of why one guy would say one thing, promoter would say another thing, but then you have another fighter that's not even on DAZN yet, that's still with Top Rank and ESPN, the name being brought into the conversation that you know that it's either going to be on DAZN or on ESPN. So I think until that is settled and between Top Rank and everybody else, I don't think we're going to know exactly where Boots Enos is going to go with his career, or even like Teofimo Lopez. But I'm with you. I wouldn't mind seeing Boots move up. If he loses to Virgil Ortiz Jr., there's no shame in it. He goes back down. And he could wait to do exactly what he said, unify like you had just mentioned right now. Or if Teofimo dares to be great and jumps up and tries to be in his Boots. Either way, to me, it's a win-win. Because the mind frame of fight fans has got to start changing their mind. A loss doesn't mean you're not a good fighter anymore. Look at Teofimo. Teofimo had a loss. He lost to Camboza.
Yeah. He came back and beat the number one guy at 140 pounds, Josh Taylor. Becoming lineal again, two-time division champion. That fight there, man, I think that's a bit of a stretch. Now, I know that it's the hot topic right now on Boxing X, or what we used to call Boxing Twitter. But I just see a lot of issues now. They're talking about doing a joint pay-per-view between ESPN and DAZN. To try to get this thing across the finish line.
We're talking about Teofimo Lopez versus Boots.
Boots, yes. Which makes sense, right? Because Enes is getting paid a lot of money to fight these guys that he's fighting, who quite frankly don't have any kind of name here in the U.S. market. So if you're going to put him in there with a guy who's arguably the best all-around, most skilled guy that he's been in with, would be Teofimo Lopez at this point.
Right.
So he's going to want more than $3 million, that's for sure, for that fight. Now, Teofimo's a guy who complained about his lack of pay with Top Rank. So he's another guy who's looking to make a huge payday. And not to mention, I've heard him in interviews where he's talking about fighting guys like Tank Davis, Ryan Garcia, who, quite frankly, draw a lot more attention than Teofimo Lopez. There's debate on whether he's better than someone like a Tank Davis. You know, I'd say he's probably better than a Ryan Garcia. But at the end of the day, like you said, Dave, this is a business. And what you've accomplished, it doesn't always equate to money when negotiating these fights.
Right.
So he's got to be more realistic. He's not going to be the A side against Ryan. He's not going to be the A side against Tank. He most likely isn't going to be the A side here against Boots. So it's going to be hard, man. Both guys are going to demand a lot of money for that fight. We'll see if ESPN can confront their bill with Teofimo and then DAZN confront the bill with Enes. Maybe that can get it across the finish line. But again, it all depends on what these guys demand. Lopez, again, he's talking about being A-side over guys who've drawn a lot of money. So his demands have got to come down if the fight's going to happen. I don't see it. I just don't see it happening.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's why the business heads have to get together and figure that one out, those figures, to make something like that happen. And the manager who's ever managing Teofimo Lopez has got to have such a good strategic game plan to entice whoever's going to fit that bill to give him whatever he's looking for. Again, Teofimo threw out there on X that it's negotiation. He's not stuck on that number. He's throwing it out. He said that his people reached out. Let's see what comes back, but nobody's answering the call. That's his gripe. You know, the thing is that I think the way a fighter can determine their value, if you want to really determine their value immediately, is point out who's calling you up, who's calling you out. Is your name being dropped regularly through everybody else in the rankings from below and above? I know Tank Davis isn't calling him out. If anything, Tank Davis' name is the one that's being spewed out by every other fighter from north to south.
Yeah, I think Tank had said something recently about slapping him when he sees him in public or something like that. But I don't know if he's actually said he would like to get into the ring with him, you know? But no, you're right. Lopez.
I love Lopez. Very talented kid. Always impresses me, especially when he's in the Gordo mode. When he got the Gordo mode, that kid is on freaking point. Very difficult to defeat. Okay. He has a little bit of everything that I would want a fighter to have when they step into the ring. The problem with him is that sometimes you don't know if the switch is on or if the switch is off. He rises to the occasion when his opponent is threatening. Other than that, if you're mediocre, he's going to fight you that same way. But he's a kind of fighter, and he's in that, you know, in position of his career. Now, we're not talking money status here. We're just talking about what he's accomplished in career-wise, where he tends to get bored. And I think he's I think he's trying to unite something. But and I get it. You need new challenges. You need new challenges. Okay. But I think that's where you got to go back to the drawing board with your promoter and, you know, get your name out there. Stop saying some of this outlandish shit. Some of these, you know, really hitting that line of controversy, you know.
Yeah.
I get it. You know, let me tell you this. In the 80s and 90s, I mean, let's even further back from then in the boxing history, a villain was just a villain. It was his personality. As much as I love Hector Camacho Sr., rest in peace, my brother. By far one of the greatest Puerto Rican fighters that ever laced gloves. You just had to love to hate him. It was him. There was no acting with the guy. It was 24/7. Ricardo Mayorga, the Manador. That was his personality. That's just who he was. You just love to hate certain guys. And I think a lot of these kids nowadays, because they don't know how to be socially, you know, acceptable because of their awkwardness, it shows in their, you know, that they're more comfortable on the internet. You're more comfortable with your thoughts because, you know, there's no consequence, right, with your thoughts. And it's not like back in our time and stuff, you know. If you said something about somebody, that would, you know, would bounce to this guy, that guy. And that person would show up like, hey, man, I heard you were talking all this stuff about me. What's that all about?
Yeah.
Things have changed. You know what I mean? Things have changed. We see a lot of faceless guys now on Twitter telling fighters that they're bums and they're this and that. And I think that a lot of fighters as well have lost touch that, you know, playing a role, if it's not organic, it comes off cringe, really cringy.
Yeah, that's true, because a lot of the things that the kid says is, you hear it and you're just like, oh, it makes the little hairs on the back of your neck stand up, you know? It's like, oh, gosh, like, all right, I've seen enough. I heard enough.
Okay. Where's his dad? Where's
his dad? Yeah, bro? Just get back in the ring and fight someone, man. Like, he's been out for a while. I think he fought sometime in the summer was the last time he was in the ring, Teofimo. So get back in the ring with someone soon. He's down there training with Reynoso. And look, I've had my opinions on Reynoso as a trainer. I think he's good for Canelo. He hasn't really shown that style to translate well with anyone else besides Canelo. But Lopez, we'll see, man. He's a very talented kid.
Very smart. He's got a great IQ in the sport. You can't deny that. Very intelligent in the ring. He's got to learn how to translate it outside the ring. Pickett, Reynoso, I mean, look, he's with a winning team. That's how he looks at it, you know? Yeah. And you know this, if, you know, when you're questioning yourself and you're saying like, you know, I need greatness. I need to do something. If you get in line with the right people, then you feel more sure of yourself. Your confidence is up. And I think that's what he needed to be. And he's confident up. He's got, like, you know, so many fighters now claim mental illness. You know, we don't know if it's true. We don't know if not. But, I mean, this has become common throughout the world.
Yeah.
You know, depression is huge here in the United States. So when the kid says, like, look, I'm having my lows, I'm having my down, Ryan Garcia. I mean, visually, we saw it. We lived the timeline of Ryan Garcia. We're still living that timeline with Ryan Garcia.
Yeah. Unfortunately, and
you don't like it when he says F this and suck that and do this and then love you, Jesus.
Boy, yeah, the kid's all over the place sometimes, man. Let's just hope that he could find that happy place and just be more positive with the stuff that he does. Same thing with Teofimo. He said some crazy things in the past. He's talked about suicide.
Yep.
Not good. But, you know, he looks like he's eager to get back in there. So, look, if he's going to fight Boots next, I'm all for it. I think it's a good fight. I have my doubts if it gets across the finish line. But I really wanted to see that Ortiz Jr. versus Ennis. Boots Ennis, because that's a fight that I've been talking about for almost 3 years now, about those guys when they were both at 147 pounds or on a collision course possibly. They both were young. They both looked good. They were knocking people out. It just looked like something that was brewing and that was going to hit. Unfortunately, with Ortiz, he had some health issues and had to move up. And Boots is still down at 147, and it doesn't look like he's ready to make that jump yet. So we might have to wait a little bit longer for that one to happen, but I'm still looking forward to it, man. But I was disappointed because it seemed like it was all but set, ready to go. And, yeah, fumble.
Yep. That's why, I never get excited anymore until they step into that ring. You know, I've learned the hard way with our sport. You know, but let me ask you this, man. So Virgil Ortiz Jr., is he a quack quack? Quack quack. Is he a quack quack? Is he a ducker too? Because I'm hearing that a prospect out of Puerto Rico, man, is calling him out. And Ortiz was like, nah, I ain't going to do it. Not fighting you.
I've heard the talks, man. They've been calling him a pato, you know, pato, 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 you know.
Quack quack.
I don't think so. You know, you and I agree on this, man. Fighters aren't scared to fight. No. It's again, boxing is ran like a business. So things have to make sense, right?
Right.
The prospect you're talking about is a young Xander Zayas. I believe he's 22 years old. This is a kid I've interviewed multiple times. Watched
great kid.
Him grow.
Great style.
Fantastic kid. He's got natural charisma. Right.
Yes.
There's just something about the kid that the fans love, particular his native fans, the Puerto Rican fans. They
absolutely
love Xander Zayas, and for good reason. The kid is shown dedication. He's shown discipline. He's shown improvement over the last 4 years that he's been fighting, and you know, top rank. He's with possibly the best promotion right now in boxing with Hall of Famers all over the place. Arum, Goodman, Trampler. These guys have built stars, and that's what they're looking to do with young Xander Zayas here. He's got the charisma. He's got the fans. They're moving him along wonderfully. Putting him in with Virgil Ortiz right now, no. Bad idea, in my opinion. He's not ready for that type of fight. I think he would get hurt bad in that fight if they made it right now. And that would be very detrimental to the kid's development at this point, I think. In a couple of years, maybe, we might see that. I'm talking maybe 2026. If he continues on the right track and just listens to the matchmakers over there at Top Rank. Yeah, we could look at something like Virgil Ortiz versus Xander Zayas, Mexico contra Puerto Rico. Oh my gosh, could be a big fight.
Trust right the process,
now,
man.
It's right now. It's yeah. not big. There's no sizzle with that fight right now.
No,
none. Absolutely none.
None.
A zero. And I don't care what anybody says about contracts being sent or whatnot. It doesn't matter, bro. The
doesn't
fight doesn't
matter.
Make any sense right now.
I completely agree with you. You know, and you know, the young Puerto Rican prospect. Look, he just wants to fight, and he wants to get his name out there. You know, yep. And I don't blame him. The kid, you know, you can't tell a kid like that that's been making a lot of noise that he's not ready. Because in their head, they're ready. But
they're ready for anybody.
Anybody. You know, you put them in front of them, they're going to take it, you know, because they feel invincible. Mm-hmm. But the thing is trust the process. Top Rank has built yeah. fighters. And when I think of, when I think about a young guy that wants to face a guy that's seasoned already, a guy that's ready to burst out of the scene in Virgil Ortiz Jr., it reminds me of a young Fernando Vargas who decided to go against what their his promoter was telling him at the time, Main Events. No, Trinidad is too seasoned. But he was like, no, I want that. He beat Ike Corte, wanted Oscar De La mm-hmm. Hoya, and the only way that he saw that would get him closer to that goal, which was the Golden Boy, was to beat a guy that beat Oscar, Tito Trinidad.
Right.
And we saw, not in the third round, not even in the first minute, it was the first 10, 15 seconds that he was not ready.
Yeah.
Got clipped with a beautiful left hook by Tito Trinidad, who has one of the most vicious left hooks
ever
in history, in the welterweight mm-hmm. and middleweight. Okay. Also, in terms of popularity, again, hardcore fans, you got to realize we are a very small community. We're a niche community. It's not a casual community, you know? And if you don't believe me, remember Devon Alexander versus Timothy Bradley. That also comes to mind. Want to hear about fights that want to be rushed too quick. Those two guys went to the Silverdome. Nobody showed up. And it wasn't even a good fight. You know who was protesting that fight? I had him on leaving the ring, and he was protesting the fight, saying, I don't want this fight to happen, but I'm getting pushed, forced to do it because it's too early, it's too soon. It's not going to be a good fight. Timothy Bradley says, it's not going to be a good fight. It's not going to be a good fight. It's not going to sell good. This guy was being his own manager, promoter, and his own critic, all in one, telling everybody that would listen to him, it's not going to be a good fight, guys. But if you want it, and you said it best, G, they're fighters. They're prize fighters. If you're going to pay me to be there, I guess I'll be there. But don't bitch and moan when I told you so that this was not going to be good.
Yep.
I agree with
that's
you
100%. Funny thing. Mm-hmm. That's the funny thing with fighters, Dave, and you know this. You've been in gyms many years as well as I have. We'll see guys who won't even end up having a career, won't even have an amateur fight. But because they learned how to throw a proper right hand on the bag, you know, as soon as they leave the gym, they're looking around for someone to punch with it, you know?
Right,
like,
right.
And just imagine someone with the amount of ability of these guys at this level, right?
Absolutely.
They think they would fight King Kong if there was an offer and it was good money, you know? There's no doubt about that. But again, it's just got to make sense, man. And right now, it doesn't make sense.
No,
it just doesn't.
It's too early for him. You know? He's still progressing beautifully.
Yes.
I mean, look, my Puerto Rican brothers, allow this kid to grow into a champion that I think he's going to grow into. I think the Top Rank has a lot of stake with this kid. They see a lot of potential, you know, and I don't think Ortiz is the right move for the moment. Maybe maybe next year, like you had just mentioned. In 2026. Maybe then. Let him get in 2, 3, 4 more fights under his belt with Top Rank. And then sneak in. And within those 2, 3 fights, sneak in an ex-champion or a fringe champion. Stick him in there with that, you know, on that third fight. That will tell us more or less where he stands and where he's at. Okay? And
I agree.
You don't believe me, Look at Matchroom this past Saturday. Matchroom was matching guys, and people were complaining. They're like, oh, you put them in, they're too tough. How dare you do that? I wanted to see him continue to swim, not sink, not drown. It's a perfect example. It's a perfect example. If you don't want to see stuff like that happen, then you got to trust the process.
Yes. And what I was told by a lot of people in the business is that when testing prospects, you know, the last test that you want to put them in before you get them to that next level, possibly going for a world title or something, is a power puncher. You want to see if the kid's got some real whiskers, right? Build them along the way, build the fan base, get him in there with some guys, maybe a guy who's a little bit slick, but a little long the tooth. You know he's going to get him in the back end, possibly maybe a good counter puncher here and there, a tough, rugged veteran. All these things you do along the way. The last thing you want to do is get your prospect knocked the fuck out in front of a bunch of people, because people are never going to forget that. And that might mess the kid up mentally, you know, as well. So putting Zayas in right now with a power puncher like Ortiz, man, it could do some damage to him that way, possibly. I'm not just talking about him taking an L, right? Because I've said this for a long time, and I got a lot of heat for it, but I don't care. Fighters take a loss, you can't throw them away. We have to stop doing that, man. If we're gonna build stars in this sport, we have to let them fight these fights when it's time. And if they lose, we can't throw them away. But it's just not the correct time. Like you said with Eddie Hearn, I think what they're doing there is they're kind of rushing their guys. He just had another guy on the boots and his undercard. I believe his name was Cole or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Got knocked out. Got beat up badly against a guy named Manuel Gallegos. It was ugly. And, there's questions about him coming back being the same now, because he went down multiple times. It was a bad beating he took in that fight. So you have to be careful with the way that you build these guys, man. Getting them pummeled like that or knocked out, that could be very damaging in the long run.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more with that, man. Now, moving on to this past Saturday on December 7th at the Footprint Center in Phoenix, Arizona. Yes, you had the rematches. Everything was about the rematches that night. A great card from Top Rank on ESPN Plus. Truly enjoyed it. The prospects there from the Garcia Academy. I've been critical of Robert Garcia, but I'm telling you what, he's starting to prove more and more that this guy is He's something to reckon with as a trainer. He's really came into his own. He's really showed what he can do with fighters that are pressure fighters. I think if anybody's a pressure fighter, I think he's the guy you should go to, you know. But going into the fight here, you had Emmanuel Navarrete versus Oscar Valdez, which only went to the seventh round. It was a KO. The win for Navarrete. And then you have Rafael Espinoza versus Roseby Ramirez. And that was only to the sixth round in the TKO. But before we get into that, man, and break that down, I want to talk a little bit about, for sure, Richard Torres Jr. versus Isaac Munoz Gutierrez. Richard Torres Jr. is a silverless Olympian, a heavyweight. He's a small heavyweight. He's not the biggest guy in the world. But boy, the guy packs a big punch. And then after that, I do want to mention you. Who caught your eye and impressed you the most out of that whole fight card on Top Rank, G-Funky? But let's get into Richard Torres Jr. here, man. What do you think about the kid? Now, I've said this a few times on X, and anybody else that would listen to me, he reminds me of Joe Macy. He's a small, explosive. He's got some boxing. We don't know how polished Richard Torres is yet, because he hasn't really had to show it. And the guys that they're putting him in front are for him to build confidence, to be more recognizable with the fans. He's a likable kid. He brings that 1970 aura about himself with that porn stash, Ted Danson. I mean, not Ted Danson. What's the other dude for Magnum P.I.?
Geez.
God, I can't remember. I have it in my head, but... You're not showing showing you our age here a little bit, but You know, yeah. but if anything, fight
Tom
fans.
Tom Selleck.
And what he really does truly bring is explosiveness that fight fans want to see. He's got this, you know, KO power that we know if he lands it flush, his opponent's done and gone. The only thing is he's been knocking out C guys. Now, he moved up a little bit here. And I know a lot of people didn't know about Munoz. But I've seen Munoz fight twice. And I'll tell you, the kid's got some hands. He does have a bit of a boxing IQ. I thought the fight was going to go a little bit longer. The problem with Isaac Munoz is that he's just not conditioned. Every time I've seen him, he's never been conditioned. You know, and he's not a full-time fighter like Torres Jr. is. But let me ask you this. Where does Torres go from here? I think fans are already calling for him to make a major step up. Or does he stay at where he's at, still knocking out guys that are in the C level, but then trickling into that B level, which it did with Munoz? I got to admit, Munoz was packed. He was on the border for me of a C and B. Didn't have a significant win to really get him to say he was a B, but he did have the skills to say, like, he can get there if he actually trained.
I agree with you on that, your assessment there of Munoz. He's got some skills, man. And in that fight, I think it only went three rounds. He did show some good timing, good counter punching. And, you know, he's a little slick in there, man, for a heavyweight. But like you said, his conditioning is just not there. So as soon as he started getting clipped with some shots himself, it wasn't looking so well. So as far as Torres goes, I mean, I feel like there was some things there that he could build on because, like I said, Munoz was able to time him a couple of times, was able to counter shot him a few times. So he can't, now he has to understand, look, you can't just come in reckless. You know, you're going to have to set some things up, set your power up the correct way. So learn little things from these little tiny steps that you're taking that your matchmakers are putting you on. Pay attention, Eddie Hearn. I'm looking forward to them really moving him along a little bit more in this upcoming year, 2025. It's time to see, you know, what kind of attraction he is. He's from Tulare, California, which is, you know, Central California. Right. You could stage an event there in Fresno. They've proven that they're big fight fans there. They've sold out that place for Jose Ramirez multiple times. So, yeah, I think it's time that you step him up. Maybe not in that big arena, but somewhere in that area, you put him there and see what type of attraction he can draw there. And then you build from there. You know, that's what I think that they're going to possibly do. He might be a main event on an ESPN Plus card next year, you know, an exclusive to ESPN Plus. Before they end up leaving that network. That's what I think they're probably going to do. Test the waters there, see what kind of tickets he can sell in his region, and then they'll go from there. Then they'll assess, okay, how quickly should we move this guy along, you know? But it's clear he's got some skills. He's got Olympic pedigree, silver medalist. So there's a lot of things there that they could work with. And I think this year coming up is when we're going to see what their real plan is with Richard Torres.
Again, trust the process here. Top Rank knows what they're doing. And Richard Torres Jr., like I said, I think there's still a lot of questions to be answered by him. I don't want to see the kid rush because in reality, he's not ready for the other heavyweights that are out there right now that are you know, on the upper ladder of B and C, you know, an A. I can't picture him beating a guy like Punjabi. I can't picture him beating a guy like right now, like Daniel Dubois. I just don't see him doing any of that. Or a Joseph Parker. No. You know, even a Derek Chisora. I just don't see him doing that. Maybe later down the line. Maybe in another 2 years when they're really long at the tooth. Then you get him a shot if AJ is still around. Maybe he's the guy. Because we know that, you know, Anthony Joshua's a little chinny. He's been shown that he can box, he's do fairly well, but it only takes one flush punch by a puncher, which Richard Torres shows he is a puncher right now. We just don't know if he's that quality of a puncher that could shake up the A division just yet. We don't know that.
Yep.
And I think the test of the water would be in AJ if AJ does stick around for a whole new year and going into the beginning of 2026. I think that might be the most smart move, and I think that's where probably where Top Rank's going to end up doing with Richard Torres. Again, I like the kid. He's got charisma. He's Mexican-American, right? He is Mexican-American, right? Am I wrong about that? He's Mexican-American. I'm not sure if he speaks any Spanish, but he definitely has a look that's intriguing, and it's relatable. He's got a great sense of humor. I've seen him on TikTok and other social media platforms. He doesn't take himself too serious. Until he steps into that ring, he's all fighter, 100%.
Yeah, and he understands the outside part of the game as well. I was at a Top Rank show in Stockton last year, and he showed up, and I mean, doing interviews with everyone, every fight, and people that weren't, like, I had a media credential, right? He's doing interviews with fans that are just bought tickets, you know, and they're got their phone out, they're asking him questions, he's taking pictures, you know, he understands that part of the game as well. So, Top Rank's got a lot to build, and a lot to work with there, man. Like last year, they finally put Jared Anderson as a headliner in his home city in Oklahoma. They put him in like a theater type of setting there, sold the place out, put him in there with a guy like I believe it was I can't remember the guy's name. It was a name, some heavyweight they had a kind of a name. I think I could see them doing that with Torres this year, coming up. So we'll see who that is. There's a few guys that I have in mind that they could possibly throw him in there with. But we'll see, man. I'm looking forward to it because, like you said, man, there's a lot to go with there.
A lot to go there with him. You know, Richard Torres Jr., like, again, he's only 6'2". In heavyweight standards, he's not very good. I mean, not very big. He's a small heavyweight. You know, then you have the super heavyweights.
And that's generous, Dave. 6'2", I'm telling you. Yes. I seen the guy in person. I stood next to him. I'm 5'10". You know, Jose Ramirez and I, we stood next to each other the same height. He's not much taller than both of us, man. 6'2", maybe the top of that curly hair he's got might be 6'2".
The Tom Selleck dude, maybe. Right. And again, so that tells you a lot there. That's why I call him a Joe Macy. They got to move him.
Yeah.
You got to move him correctly. You know, you're going to probably have to put him in there with some tricky, smaller guys. And then eventually move him up. I mean, I wouldn't put him in with a Michael Hunter immediately. You know, Michael Hunter's not active, but go for it.
Let me ask you this. Another California heavyweight that we could possibly see him in. I want to get your thought. Do you think that they would put him in with a guy who's become sort of an afterthought at this point, than Andy Ruiz?
I could see that happening.
Yep. Yes, sir.
Definitely could see that happening. Yeah. But Andy would price himself out.
I was just going to say that. If he comes, I mean, because look, what the hell has Ruiz been doing for the last 4 or 5 years? Nothing, you know?
Nothing.
And he hasn't looked impressive either. So that might be, at this point, he just might be a name for someone like a heavyweight on the come up, like a Richard Torres. And I think that would do fantastic here in California.
Do fantastic. And I think it could happen if Top Rank was to move over to DAZN.
Yeah, we'll see.
I mean, well, Anderson, Big Baby Anderson went over there to the, you know, to the Turk.
Against their wishes, and did it.
Right. But, you know, I could see like a Luis Ortiz, Andy Ruiz, those kind of guys there. They're really long in the tooth, you know. Chris and Nightmare Oriella, I don't want to see him come back. I think he's made enough money.
No,
I love Chris, but I think it's done. I don't want to see him get hurt. But I mean, look, Andy has shown a lot of decline since winning that title, taking that title with phenomenal fashion against AJ. I just don't see Andy anymore having that. He needs the right team, which he did have. Manuel Robles was the right guy. The right guy. And he threw that all away. Him and his father got in the way of that and ruined a relationship that didn't need fixing.
Yeah.
Anyways.
So much potential there. Yep. Terrible. Let's move on from Andy.
Let's move. I'm already getting depressed over here, man. My coffee high is coming down. As soon as you brought up Andy Ruiz, you know. Man, that's... God, it was such a phenomenal time when he won that title.
What a time, huh?
Bro, I lost my voice. My neighbors found out that day that I was a fight fan. You know, I'm surprised they didn't call the cops or anything because that night it sounded like somebody was getting murdered. You know what I mean? Jesus Christ. All right, let's go down here. Oh, the question was, who would impress you the most besides the headline and the co-main event? On that whole card of Top Rank, who was the most impressive to you in that night?
I have to say it was that kid from Garcia's camp, and not Lindolfo. Even I like Lindolfo Delgado.
I think he's a fantastic fighter. Yes.
But it was the other kid that fought before Torres. I'm sorry, his name is slipping my mind. But
Alberto Gonzalez?
Yes.
Alberto Gonzalez, who went.
Fantastic, yeah.
Okay, so he went with Gennaro Antonio Perez. Gonzalez won on unanimous decision. You know, I thought he looked great too. But the kid, I got to tell you, that really, really just made me just have a take back of memory lane is Art Barrera Jr. You know, the way he handled Juan Carlos Campos, Medina, man, was phenomenal. He got the stoppage on a TKO in the second round. Now, it was short and sweet. But the kid just shows so much maturity, poise, command in that ring. He's so fluent. And I want to see one. He's out of the Garcia Academy as well. And the majority of Top Rank, every time we see a Top Rank card, you see so many of the Garcia kids repeat. I mean, Top Rank is doing a great, great job signing these kids from the Garcia Academy. They're doing a phenomenal job. And again, was very critical of... Robert Garcia for a long time, but I think he's finally kind of honed down and became more serious as a trainer. And we're starting to see the difference there. Really starting to see the difference with his fighters, you know, more discipline.
Indeed. And he's also promoting shows too now in San Antonio. He's doing his shows over there. So he's got a lot going on, man. And you know what? Hey, good for him, man.
Absolutely.
He's doing a fantastic job, man. Good for him.
Absolutely, man. You know what? Can say it more, but Raza is the bloodline of our sport. Without us,
yeah,
it wouldn't be that much of a sport. Unless you live in the UK. I mean, you got to give them their props to
you. Oh, people, they're fantastic. Oh, yeah.
They're crowds. We have to talk about the Irish battle that they had on Pro Box. Jeez, I don't know if you had a chance to watch that. Two rounds of mayhem.
I have to send you that,
and then we have to come back on our next show and talk about that fight. You want to talk about a Hearns Hagler type of fight? Jesus Christ, it was a war, and really great to see it ending the year with that type of fight. You know, two guys went out there, you know, and just laid it. They left it all in the ring. All right, man, let's go with the co-main event with Rafael Espinoza, Roseby Ramirez. It ended very controversial. After a right hand was landed by Espinoza, who's 6'1", really tall kid, very tall kid for that division. Yes, and doesn't like to fight on the outside, but it ended up being the factor in the fight. Roseby gets clipped, puts his hand up in the air, and says he has double vision and couldn't continue. Looked like an orbital bone. I don't know if that was reported true or not. If that was the case, orbital bone broken. It's common in the sport. Guys getting the orbital broken. Some guys have fought through it. Some guys have fought through worse injuries, like a broken jaw, broken rib. Espinoza fought through their first fight, because this was a rematch, guys. Their first fight with a sprained ankle. He had sprained it in the first fight, but continue on to fight through a very, very back and forth battle. It's fight of the year, in my opinion. This one here, I had so much expectation. I was excited about this fight,
me too.
And then all of a sudden, Roseby, he just waved it off. He said, no mas. Now, is that acceptable for you, man? Or are you in line with the rest of the people in the world right now? They're saying he's a quitter. How dare you quit?
Yeah, that's always the case that we get in these type of situations. I find it funny how there's, I'm not going to name drop anyone, but there's a reporter out there who was willing to give a guy like Usyk a break when he got hit on a borderline shot, laid on the canvas for about 5 minutes. But then a guy who gets his orbital bone broken, and yes, it was reported that that's what happened when he went to the hospital after the fight, gets on the internet and calls this guy a quitter. So, look, it's just I don't, honestly, I don't care to argue with fans, or a lot of them have the dumbest takes. I just they're out there. But look, it was a real injury. There were some people out there who showed some videos of Espinoza connecting with an elbow. I believe it might have been the round before. And Robesi complained about it. But yeah, you could definitely see right away that something was wrong with that eye. It ballooned up pretty quickly.
Yep.
But still, whether you want to call him call it quitting or not, right? It was disappointing. That's for sure.
Absolutely.
Very disappointing.
Very disappointing.
The fight, like you said, coming off of last year, that fight that they had was just incredible. Robesi came out with a little bit more of a different strategy, you know, decided to stay on the outside, move a little bit, counter shot, not get into a firefight with Espinoza, which I think is smart. But yeah, it didn't result in a very good fight. And unfortunately the injury happened and he said no more. So it's back to the drawing board seriously now with Robesi. This is his third defeat of his career. He's a two-time gold medalist. I still think he's a good fighter. But yeah, he's got a lot to make up with the fans now after this.
Yeah, and that's the hump that fighters got to do when they do something like that. It reminds me of Robert the Ghost Guerrero getting the cut at the HP Pavilion. Nasty cut. Mm. And he wanted to continue, but it was the doctor that said no. After Robert said, I can't see. Big old gash in his eye. It was nasty. And fans alike came down hard on him. And he still went on to be in, I believe, one or two fight of the years. You know, guy showed his heart on his sleeve. Roseby Ramirez, we don't know. And here's the thing, too, like to point out. Yes, we want to see our warriors, man, fight through the fire. Because this is a blood, guts, and close to death type of sport. Timothy Bradley was in every right to speak his mind as a fighter. As a fighter. But I also like to point out that a person's body is a, to me, it's a it's per case. And right. Why I say that is because a person's body will tell them when they're done. And here's another thing that I think that some folks got to realize is that some fighters have never, if they've never been in that position, they tend to panic. If they don't have a good, that's why you need an educated, experienced corner. How many times have I stressed this out, G?
Yeah.
You have to have an educated, experienced corner. The reason is when he came back, whatever round that was, you know, before the stoppage, before him waving it off, and he conveyed to his corner saying, I can't see, I'm seeing double. He should have had an experienced corner walk him through. Make him feel that that's just an added obstacle. We can get through this together if you listen to my voice. Listen to my words, okay? So it when I see that happen, it reminds me of what happened to Tim Zhu. Excuse me, with Tim Zhu. Got a cut.
Oh, right.
He panicked.
Cut, yeah.
Didn't know what to do. He didn't know how to fight with this blemish. His vision wasn't clear. And we saw what happened with when he fought Fandora, who's 6'4", recorded 6'5". And we saw what happened to him. The kid hasn't been the same since. Okay?
No.
Roseby Ramirez panicked. Didn't know how to respond to it. Never been in that situation. Let me tell you this. It's hard to be prepared for something like that if you've never you know, been in that predicament. Yes. It is. But there are ways, G, to prepare for it. There are ways to, like, get yourself going. I remember one time being at the wild card gym. I've went a few times, you know, back in the day. Went to go cover Manny Pacquiao when he was fight Oscar De La Hoya, when he was going to fight Cotto, et cetera, Miracle, all that. But I would see fighters in there. And they would kneel down, which I wouldn't do now. I won't kneel because my knees, and I'm up there. Unless you pay me like if I was Mike Tyson, you pay me that much money. Gee, I'll break dance for you, homeboy. You don't even know. You know what I mean? Yeah. I'll put on my penny loafers and stuff with high top socks and stuff. Okay. Bend down, close your eyes and spin in a circle.
Yeah.
And then get back up and shadow box so they can be distorted. So that if when they get rocked, they get their bell rang, they'll go like, it's familiar. Like, okay, I've been here before. I just got to get through these seconds. I got to get through these seconds. You know, it's the same thing with a guy that if he has a problem dropping his left or his right, and he gets get it clipped. What does a trainer do? He either puts a mitt underneath his arm or they tie it to his face.
Yeah.
Till he learns. There are certain things to learn here. Okay. And I think with Ramirez is that he wasn't prepared. They were prepared for a game plan I thought was working. That he was doing very well. But it did start to see familiar. It started to seem to be familiar again, G. Because Espinoza started finding that range.
Yeah, picked up the pace on him.
He picked up that pace, you know, and I think that was their game plan. Okay, let's pick up that pace. You know, they didn't pick it up from the 12th round like they said they were going to do. It didn't happen until that fourth round. But going back, Ramirez, I think that's what happened to him. He panicked, didn't know what to do, didn't know how to adjust to it. The only thing that was quick in his mind, and we talk about emotions. We just talked about that with Enes Boots, emotions. His emotion was shut down. I'm out before I get hurt. I got to think about longevity. And I give him kudos for that. He made an executive decision for himself and said, you know, I got to get out of this. There's still more fight in me. Yeah, I'm going to have to reconvince the fight fans to come out and see me again. But it only takes that one fight, man. Arturo Gatti, Mickey Ward, Antonio Barrera. It only takes that one fight to reel back the fans. They go like, yes, this is who I came out to witness. You know, and then sometimes too, there's always a fighter out there that has your number. And I think Espinoza has Ramirez's number. Even if they were to fight a third time, I just don't see him getting past a 6'1" fighter like that.
Featherweight. Insane. Yeah. No, that's a good point, man. You see the fighters do things like that. I've seen some of them do tumbles for about 30 seconds.
Right.
You know, or somersaults, and then, you know, they get up and shadow box, you know, like you said, it gives them that sense of, man, I just got my bell rung, I'm dizzy, everything's spinning, you know, but I'm going to shadow box here, I'm going to pretend that there's a guy in front of me. Yeah, those are all things that you have to incorporate in your training, because like the great Larry Merchant said, man, boxing is the theater of the unexpected. Anything can happen in that ring, man.
Yep. You know, and you know what? It's not the last, you know, so I don't think that Rosie Ramirez should be down on himself about doing this. Of course, you get a backlash from the fans, you know, because see, we're bloodthirsty, man. We are bloodthirsty. We want to we came to watch blood, and that's what I expected. I was disappointed. I think you were anybody that tuned in was disappointed. We wanted to see a full out war that we expected to happen. But it's like everything else, you know. Sometimes we just don't get what we're asking for, and we got to move on.
Yep. Yep. In the words of the Rolling Stones, you can't always get what you want.
You can't always get what you want. I love that song, man. Now I'm going to have that in my head until the rest of the night here. All right. Well, what did live up to the hype? Was Navarrete, Emmanuel Navarrete, and Oscar Valdez. They did it again. This was the rematch as well. Wasn't expecting it to be as good as it was. I thought the first fight we were talking about was going to steal the show like it did the last time. But no, Emmanuel Navarrete comes out there with his dad body, takes control of the fight. And when I talk about a guy having your number, Navarrete has Oscar Valdez's number. Feel bad for Oscar. Love Oscar. I've always thought he was a great fighter. He's always showed real true heart true grit when he steps into that ring. He gives you 100%. You know, no matter whether he's a one-handed fighter or he's in there overthinking about what he's going to do, you know, in his eyes and in his heart, he's trying to give you his all and a bit more. Went out there, G, and had a game plan. But I continue to say this. I like Reynoso. I think he's a great trainer, just like what you mentioned before, but I think he's just the wrong fit. Manuel Robles would have been it was the perfect fit for Valdez. You know?
Yep. I don't understand the split. Never will. I think he was a much better fighter under Manny Robles than Eddie Reynoso, but he's had some big moments with Eddie. You know, like the Burchelt win was huge for him.
Huge with him, you know? Right? It was. It was.
A lot of people felt like what happened to him against Navarrete last Saturday was what was going to happen to him against Burchelt just 3 years ago.
Absolutely.
And that wasn't the case. But, yeah, the game plan was pretty clear for me. It was for Oscar, kill or be killed. You know, and unfortunately for him, he got killed. Not literally, but, yeah, he got stopped in 6 rounds, I believe, against El Vaquero Navarrete, who lives up to that name, the cowboy, man. He is a fucking wild man out there, throwing these crazy punches from weird angles at different times. But not only that, but the thing is this with him, which makes it so crazy, is that Valdez by no stretch is this guy can punch, okay? He's shown devastating power, one punch power he's shown throughout his career. Navarrete was able to eat some of those shots like M&Ms, bro. And I mean, and that's the tricky part with this guy is you can't figure him out. He's so unorthodox.
Yep.
How do you get sparring for this guy? How do you train for this guy? And then when he takes your best punch on the chin and keeps coming, boy, oh boy. He's just one of those fighters, man.
Well, you know what's crazy? You know what's crazy here? When I think about that right now, what you were mentioning, I was thinking about how do you get ready for a guy that's so awkward, does everything wrong in the ring, but it seems to be right just for him. Okay, there's no fundamentals with this guy. Even his footwork is very odd. The angles that he throws off this footwork is very, very odd. It reminds me a little bit of a Prince Hamed, Nassim, you know, the way he generates powers with weird angles, okay? The thing is that Valdez did have a game plan. That game plan, as you mentioned, was attack. But it looked like it was going to be a body attack. And I tend to believe that if he had Manuel Robles with him, that body attack would have been a little bit better, been a little bit more strategic, had a little bit more, Robles would have had a little bit more insight of what to do when he came back. Better advice. Because, you know, Reynoso, to me, is his strong suit is counterpunching.
Yeah.
Not coming forward. But here's the thing. How do you beat a guy that's so awkward? Well, the obvious answer is body work. But the thing is that Navarrete has this unpredictable uppercut to get you away from that game plan.
Oh, man. Yeah.
You know? So the only thing I could think of is you got to sit in the fire with Navarrete, go to the body, make him commit to an uppercut, then you finish on the top. And that's something that we didn't see with Valdez. We either saw him shoot to the head, stop, pause, reset, or shoot to the body, stop, pause, and reset. And the reason why you saw him stop, pause, and reset is because he was anticipating what was coming back at him.
Yeah.
And that tells you everything about Navarrete's power. It's real in that division.
It sure is, man. You know, I've studied a lot of film on this guy. I thought Valdez was going to beat him the first time with one of those beautifully timed left hooks. Well, in the first fight, he did time him on more than one occasion with that left hook. But again, the problem is, didn't hurt him. You know, so it's like, what do you do with a guy? He takes your best punch and then he keeps coming at you with these weird punches that he shouldn't be throwing, but he It's a Rubik's Cube, man. It really is at this point on how to beat this guy. Credit to him though, man. He's a tough guy. He's a tough out for anyone, man. So we'll see what they do with him next. You know, I know Shockey Foster was there. I'd like
love
to
see
that fight.
Me too.
I'd like to see that fight. As far as Valdez goes, I know people are calling for him to retire. I mean, look, he's only lost to Navarrete and Stevenson.
Yep.
You know? And yep. he's still a good fighter, man.
Look, that was a competitive fight between Navarrete and Valdez. It wasn't one-sided. It wasn't like the kid looked old. It just looked like he's got my number. No matter what I did, he had an answer to everything. And he couldn't figure out that puzzle. I like to see him move on. There's other names out there to rebuild him back up. I think Foster, the kid you mentioned right now, to me, that's the logical choice for Navarrete. I think that anything other than that is just to keep him busy. Those are the fights that need to happen. Valdez, he just needs to regather himself. Now, you know, the thing was that he took it personal with the first loss with Navarrete. I think he needs to go back and just understand, you know what? This is what champions have to go through. I just got to go after the other guy that's out there and just rebuild my name. That's about it. And he still has a massive fan base. I mean, I'm going to be there to watch him again.
Me too. Great fighter. He's entertaining. He looks to get his guys out of there. Yeah. What's not to like about the kid, man? And same thing with Navarrete, man. He's just, he is a cowboy, man. Like he lives up to his name every time he gets out there. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, that fight, I don't want to say save the night, but, it definitely helped. It closed the show strong. I'll say this, real quickly, that I was very disappointed in ESPN's coverage of the fight, making us wait almost an hour from when the undercard portion on ESPN Plus was over for some lopsided college football game that they had to show the whole thing, you know. It was terrible, man. It was terrible. I don't want to sit through that, man, anymore. So, you know, the things we've been hearing about Top Rank and them parting ways with ESPN, look, I'm glad. Look, give them a hand.
Absolutely. Right.
I don't want to deal with that no more, man.
I hear you, man. And I know obviously they have had to hurt a lot of fight fans complain about that, you know, but until the network that you're being hosted on sees you as more of a quality add-on than just an add-on,
right,
we're going to be treated like the stepchild.
Yeah.
On that same Saturday in Puerto Rico, December 7th, we had Richardson Hitchens versus Liam Pryor. It went all 12 rounds. It was on a split decision. Henry LeBron was on the co-main event with Christopher Diaz. LeBron wins on a unanimous decision. Also, you know, a prospect that some folks were having hopes in, Mark Castro, he lost a split decision. Some say it's very questionable. Who was it? Quintana, right? Was against Quintana? Ezekiel Quintana or something like that?
Oh, man. Yeah. Not a good outing. Castro hasn't looked the par yet, you know, in his pro career.
Just are stuck in the mud of being an amateur. You know, there's some guys like you go to a gym and they do phenomenal work in the gym. But once you get them underneath that spotlight, they're not the same fighter. And a lot of amateur fighters too, with great pedigrees, they come out, but they can't seem to shake the pity pat. They can't seem to put their foot down and dig hard to land big punches.
He's one of them.
He's one of them.
He's one of them because he's an accomplished amateur.
Yeah.
And you don't do those things that he did without being talented and good. It's just.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It hasn't seemed to translate to the professional side of boxing. So, but yeah, as far as the other fights that you mentioned, LeBron and Diaz. God, that was horrible. Oh my gosh. And, you know, and I'm watching that thing and I'm like, this is so bad. And then knowing that next up is Liam Parrow and Richardson Hitchens, I'm like, oh boy.
I was expecting a little bit more. You know, being that Liam Parrow is on the, you know, on the opposite, I thought it was gonna be a little bit more, but no, it was really tough to watch. It was a hug fest.
Guys, those two fights were brutal to watch.
Yeah,
and guys, this is coming from someone who's watched boxing pretty much his whole life. Dave as well. Brutal, yeah. Absolutely brutal to watch. And look, I don't want to be so all negative. Let's give Hitchens his credit, all right?
Absolutely.
He becomes the IBF super lightweight champion, so congratulations to him, man. A tremendous accomplishment in your career. But my guy, the fans, you didn't win over any fans with that performance, just the fans that you already had. And yeah, if you're not going to care about what the fans think about your performances, you're going to be fighting guys like this for a long, long time.
And if you're going to have if you're going to have a performance like that, at least bring your if you're on the bicycle,
right.
At least do that. At least wake us up from every time you're going to hug and run. And somewhere the quiet man, John Ruiz, is out there and just going like, yeah, I don't see the problem. I kind of like this style here.
Yeah, it's fantastic. You know, yeah. Yeah, guys. I mean, look, I'm being dead serious, man. He won over no new fans with that performance.
No.
Yeah. Terrible, terrible, terrible fight.
If you're looking to move the needle to get fans to tune in or be behind you when you call out other guys on X, that wasn't the performance to get guys behind you.
No.
This really wasn't. And it also...
Ticket sellers aren't going to touch you with a 10-foot pole, man.
Exactly. You know, and I get it. I get it. If you want that safety first style. Hold on here, bro. Somebody's at my front door.
Yeah.
Oh.
Amazon?
No. My kids. Yeah, if you want that, you know, safety first style, perfect. But you also got to accept the criticism that's going to come behind that. Okay? You also got to accept that some fans are just not going to want to see you. Shakur Stevenson is one of them. Guy just doesn't have an appealing style. Yeah, he's phenomenal. Talented. But just a speck of risk is what we're asking for. If a guy, if you're dominating a guy and you know the guy can't hurt you, press on the gas.
Right. I mean, show something, man, because having the attitude of I'm going to come out here and stink out the joint. I don't care what the fans say. Hey, good luck with that, man. That's all I could say.
You imagine a guy, I have a fridge. Just went out. I need a new compressor in it. And it's going to cost me around $1,200. Gee. Imagine my appliance repair guy coming out and charges me $1,200 and just puts a Band-Aid on it. They say, well, you know, come here, man. So that's the best I can do. It's the best I can offer. And I'm supposed to be happy spending my hard-earned buck for that? I mean,
no.
Again, you know, I get it. It's safety first and get the win. Doesn't matter how you get it, as long as you get it. I understand all that. And I could see that some fans are like, well, Floyd Mayweather. But Floyd would step on the gas. He just didn't have the power because he moved up in weight. But when he was a featherweight, boy, was that guy a thing of beauty. A lightweight guy was a thing of beauty.
He would punish guys in there.
Yep. He would let you know you don't belong here. You did not belong in the same ring with me. So when he moved up, he did try to step on the gas. It wasn't always safety first, you know? And I think more guys are going like, I just want to come out pretty. But at the same time, you're coming out pretty, but you're coming out pretty dirty because it's not what we want to watch. We just don't want to watch that. Again, you want to do it, but if you have a guy, and I've always said this, I've always complained about guys that play with their food. And that's what I mean with Shakur Stevenson. Plays with his food, bro. This guy is not on the same level. You've already proved it. Why not try to get him out of there? And if you can't knock him out, but at least if you land at least more than one punch every minute, it would show us that you have a little bit more effort. A little bit more effort, you know?
Yeah.
It just makes it harder for us, especially for two guys that are on the radio. They're trying to sell the sport to listeners or somebody that's coming across our show to sell them something about guys that played safety first. Yeah. It's not.
Yeah. I'll just ask you guys this who actually watch those fights, right? Like we did. If you're trying to sell a casual fan to say, hey, look, why don't you start watching boxing? Like, is a guy like Hitchens someone that you're going to recommend to watch? No. He's not.
You know what they're going to tell you? You know what they're going to tell you, G? They're going to say, I'm hitching another ride to another network to see who else is on.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed, man. Those guys, yeah. I'm done talking about it.
I'm done with it, too. Yeah, there's not much we can break down about that fight. Again, if you're into holding and moving
one punch at a time, moving,
then that's your cup of tea. Mine's not that kind of cup of tea. I love tea too, man. I love to drink tea, but sometimes I like to have a little, you know, kicking it.
Yep.
So here you go, man. That's me, Dave Duenas, and G Funky here on Leaving the Ring. We'll be back next week. Obviously, there's still a lot of stuff for us to cover, but kind of ran up the hour here past the time of what we wanted to fit in. But catch us next week. We have a lot to unhand wrap here on Leaving a Ring. And hey, leave a like or a comment. You can always email us at leavingaring@gmail.com. Follow us on X at Leaving a Ring and follow G-Funky at G-Funky84. Again, if you want to email us any questions or anything that you want to talk about this segment, you can email us at leavingaring@gmail.com or hit us up on our YouTube or on X. Either way, doesn't matter to us. We pass the complaints to the guy next to us, you know. All right, man. You guys take care. G, as always, brother.
See you later. Good time, man.